It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's Riverfront, one word, for $20 off.
What's up, everybody? This is the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. I am your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me is my good friend, hopefully yours. I got the point right this time, in the right direction.
That's impressive.
Year and a half of doing this, and I finally got it figured out. Fuck yeah. It's Craig Naiman. Craig, what's up, buddy?
Living the dream, man. How you doing?
I am good. How was your New Year's?
It was good. No complaints. I think I was in bed by 11. My mom travels down to Florida. They hang out down there in the spring, and she sent me a message, Happy New Year, at whatever time, after midnight. I was already done for. No, thank you.
I think I was in bed by 9:30 reading. I had to stay up until midnight because my daughter, who's 8, wanted to stay up to midnight. And we're like, okay, fine. Like, we'll flip it over. We'll find some feed to watch the ball drop. But, like, we don't care. We're just struggling to stay awake because we're old.
Yes. Welcome to being old. We're here.
I don't want to say it's amateur hour, because, I mean, I had fun on New Year's, you know, in my day, but it's, when you get older, then it's just like, you don't want to deal with the hassle. Either you're going somewhere to where it's, you know, it's too fancy or too crowded, or then otherwise you're going to somewhere that's more lowbrow, but it's just over, you know, just too much crap to deal with. You don't want to deal with all the idiot drivers out there. Plus, it's December to January. It's cold as hell, usually, so...
I was talking to one of the other guys I coach football with, and of course they're like, he was like, oh, I know you were out. I know you were out partying. I said, nah, man, I was done for. I said, if I go out, I like to be out on like a Monday from like 5 to 8, and then I'm back in bed by 8:30, and there's nobody around, and I can hear myself talk and all that good stuff. So,
yeah, I don't like having to yell to the person next to me if I'm at a bar or restaurant. I hate crowded restaurants for that reason. Like, I'm old. I have crappy hearing, and I can barely hear my wife saying anyway, and her having to like scream across the table to me. Yeah. This is old man hour here on the Bengals Show. No,
welcome in. Huh? What was that? What'd you say?
Sorry. If you guys are watching on YouTube, hit like and subscribe, all that fun crap. If you're listening on the audio feeds, give us 5-star ratings. Rate us whatever you want to. 5-star would be awesome. We appreciate those. Otherwise, go to riverfrontcincy.com. We've got our Riverfront U content with our awesome writers for UC, Xavier, NKU, and Miami. Merch shop is up and running. We have some cool new designs up there. Is it time to eulogy the Bengals?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
23-24 Bengals it is.
Yeah, I think it's time to eulogize the 2023 Cincinnati Bengals. By now, everyone knows they lost 25-17 to Kansas City, coupled with Pittsburgh winning against the Seahawks that eliminated the Bengals from playoff contention. This has been is frustrating probably the right word?
I don't know. I mean, frustrating is probably a word. I would say trying. Like, it's just been a real trying year, you know. Every time you think you got something, you don't. And then you're right back at square one. To me, I mean, for all the Bengals fans out there, I feel like, you know, we are, this year at least, a lot like the Dallas Cowboys of the last 30 years. As soon as you start to trust them, I mean, not good. So that's kind of the vibe I get. And I don't blame the Bengals. I mean, it was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things that went wrong that could have changed, and maybe the outlook looks a whole lot different. So, I thought the Bengals gave good effort. I thought they had good game plans. I thought they continued to try to win throughout this process of the season. And things didn't fall our way. And you can easily see a scenario where this season the Bengals are sitting at 11-4 or 12-3. And so, I mean, to me, I'm not necessarily frustrated because I still think they got things done. And I thought they were productive in what they did. It didn't match up on the win and loss sheet.
It was really weird because they really never hit their stride. Yeah, and they had the nice winning streak in the middle of the season, but even then, the offense still wasn't completely fluid. I think maybe the game against San Francisco was as good as they got all season. They played a good team game against the Bills, but I mean, it wasn't dominant. They just, yeah. Browns didn't really, weren't able to, or the Browns, the Bills weren't able to accomplish much. Yeah, it's nothing happened, like nothing was ever fully functional. I mean, when Burrow was there, I mean, they injuries other places, or it took Burrow so long to get going and to get healthy to begin with. A lot of us pretty much kind of wrote the season off in Baltimore when Burrow went down. It was nice to kind of have these last better part of the last month and a half with Jake Browning overachieving. I would say overachieving by and large. To keep the interest up, but I mean that, you know, that they lasted till week 17 to get before they were eliminated. It's kind of a pleasant surprise. But even if they'd managed to eke in, I don't think anyone had any reason to think that they would do any damage in the postseason with how bad their defense is. Onward to Sunday's game, the offense was stuck in the mud in the second half. Joe Mixon had 21 total carries for 65 yards. Chase Brown had 3 carries for 5 yards. What are we doing? Chase Brown's last carry was at the 13:31 mark in the second quarter, so 21 and a half minutes into the game, and they were done giving Chase Brown the ball. Mixon had 14 carries the rest of the game, none to Chase Brown. Why? I don't get it.
I have nothing for you. I don't. I don't know where the thought process would be that is. I know you're trying to win and you're still thinking playoffs, but I mean, it makes no sense. Why would Chase Brown not get carries when he's clearly the future? I really I always try to put myself in their position and like try to figure out why they would do that. I have no explanation other than I think their goal was to get him more carries than they got him. And once they got into the game, they just kind of lost their way and kind of forgot. But inexcusable to me. I don't understand the thought process. I really don't.
Well, and he's the much more dynamic. Even if, you know, second half when Chiefs started running down up and down the field, kicking field goals, when you knew that they weren't going to pass the ball or they weren't going to run the ball, it's going to be passing, you still had Joe Mixon in there. Again, proving how terrible of a blocker is. I mean, he had a couple just awful, brutal misses. And Chase Brown's more explosive. Like, what?
You think they would use these game reps for exactly that, game reps. As many reps as you can get these young guys when, you know, especially for Chase Brown, a guy that didn't have a whole lot of reps throughout the season, you know, because of injuries and whatever, and he's a rookie and he's coming along early, and then the hamstring thing. And so I understand, you know, the reps were limited, but here's a perfect opportunity to find out exactly what, you know, just more game reps, find out what he's going to be like with 30 reps. I just, I really don't understand it. It's baffling.
Yeah, I mean, Chase Brown was in for 6 pass snaps, ran 4 routes. This is Marvin Lewis type. We're trusting the devil we know over, you know, over the other thing, for, you know, trusting the old guy that has.
And that's one thing that I would have wanted to see Chase Brown. I'm not even necessarily worried about the carries. I mean, we know he can run the ball. We know he can make plays out of the backfield. I want to see him in. Let's put him in pass pro right now. What? Why not? It doesn't make sense to me, because pass pro is the one thing that, you know, in practice is so hard to simulate, you know, the looks you're going to get from other teams, and it just looks different. You know, when you're doing pass pro against your own team, you know, it's not really full go. Nobody's going to lay the quarterback out. Like, this was a perfect opportunity for game reps and pass pro, which I would think would be the number one thing you would want for Chase Brown.
You know what this is, besides my hand? This is the amount of pass blocking reps Chase Brown has had all season. 5. Crazy. 5. And again, I mean, Travion Brown is a good blocking back. So I understand him being the third down back, or of late, second half of the season, they were using Drew Sample motion at him into the backfield as kind of a H-back, fullback type player. But when you need to move the ball and you're struggling with guys that don't have any speed, that they can't get any separation, they were doubling Chase. They were doubling the outside receivers, Chase and T, or whomever was out there, every time on third down, and most of the other games, or most of the other downs as well. You'd want somebody explosive. We know Joe Mixon isn't explosive. Even if you're his most ardent fan, he's not explosive. He's more steady. Yeah, he'll catch the ball, and he can make some. He's a good receiver out of the backfield, especially on screens, but he's not a guy who's going to break it 60, 70 yards. Chase Brown has that speed. Chase Brown broke one for 55 yards, and oh, by the way, had the second fastest recorded speed in the entire NFL. Like, this guy has speed. He's got catching ability. And the only question he had coming out of college was fumbling. He fumbled 5 times his last year at Illinois, but you drafted him for a reason. You didn't use him at all before he got hurt, and you started to integrate him, but then they almost reverted to pre-injury. And like, well, Bengals ran the ball the fewest amount, or have run the ball the fewest, or maybe the second fewest amount of times of any team in the league. Yes, somehow Joe Mixon is 5th in the league in rushes.
Yeah.
This isn't...
The Bengals are one of... I off the top of my head, I can't think of the other ones, but they're the only one back system. I mean, you know, nobody else has a featured back. The Falcons drafted Bijan Robinson at what, 8? And
I heard that, I think.
Yeah. So, and he is not the featured back. I mean, Tyler Allgeier gets carries.
Cordell Patterson. They still put him in the backfield.
Alvin Kamara. I mean, the Saints signed Jamal Williams. Like nobody has featured backs. It does not happen. And the Bengals have hitched their wagon to Mixon as a featured back, which, you know, I understand if you don't have anybody else, but Chase Brown showed himself to be more than worthy. So I just, again, I'm just, it is baffling.
Yeah. And even if you, I get like they Chris Evans has just completely, I mean, he's barely even a thought at Paycor Stadium. Fine, whatever, that's fine. Travion Williams is just a blocking back. He's, you know, he'll get a few carries throughout the year, maybe a few catches, but he's not someone you have more depth. This isn't 1990. I mean, hell, even in 1990, I mean, late 80s and 90s, the Bengals had a two-back system, and it was very effective. So it's just frustrating and confusing, and for the life of me, I just don't understand it.
Well, I mean, and this is no offense to Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon's a nice back and has had a great career in Cincinnati, and I love the way he runs. I love his style. I love everything about it. But he's not Corey Dillon. I mean, I just don't understand how you can end a game with Mixon having 21 carries for 65, and then, you know, your two other running backs have 4 carries. It doesn't add up. It really doesn't.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's almost like this weird fetish. Whatever. But yeah, I mean, the offense was stuck in the mud. Second half, like, outside of the one, their first drive when they drove down, and had fourth and goal from the one. Let me ask, what was your thought on that? They were up 17-13 at that point of the game. Do you have a problem? Are you okay with them going for the first down?
I'm okay with it.
Okay.
You need to have it's kind of like the Lions going for two. I'm okay with it if that's what you want to do and you want to be aggressive, and that's been Zach Taylor's thing. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to force the issue, but you got to have the right play ready. I mean, you got to have a play. That's why, you know, with the Lions going for two, they had their play.
Yeah.
And clearly that's fine. You know, once they get the penalty, you got to kick the extra point, whole different issue. But for the Bengals, I'm fine with you going for two and being aggressive. I'm never going to take that away from a coach. But then the play call to me, I didn't love it. You got to have something. This is our play, boys. We've ran this play four times during the week, and we know we're going to run this play on fourth and one. This is our fourth and one play. When we got to have it, this is the play, and everybody knows it. And that play to me did not look to have that kind of feeling to it, that this was the play. So if you don't have a play, then I kick the field goal. I mean, it sends a message when it's one thing as a coach if you have the play, okay, and your guys know it's the play for fourth and one. Okay, well, then if we get stopped, that's on us. But if you just come out with a random play on fourth and one and get stopped, now you're telling your team, well, being up seven, we didn't feel good about that. We didn't like our chances being up seven. That's not a good message that you're sending. So maybe that was the play. Maybe that's something that, you know, they talk. I don't know, but it sure didn't look like it. I personally would have liked to kick the field goal. I just feel like being up seven in the NFL is worth some things. I don't know. Points seem to be tough to come by. So I would have taken the points, but I'm okay with the call, just not exactly, you know, what they called. I'm okay with the decision, just not the play call.
I think them going for it was Zach Taylor saying, I don't trust my defense one bit.
100%.
They had stopped the Chiefs twice to that point. One was on a strip sack fumble, and the other was a first drive coming out of the half, and they had three and out. They knew they needed points, so I completely have zero problem at all with them going for it. But the play call, the Bengals are terrible short yardage running team. Joe Mixon is not good at making people miss, especially when he has to stop his feet. And you come in that alignment. They brought in the extra lineman. They brought in Cody Ford, and everybody knows, you stuff the middle of the line, try to force Chase to bounce it outside. If they, you know, if they play action, if they boot, react off that. But number one, number two, number three priority is clog up the middle of the line. I would have, and part of me wonders if this was them overreacting last time when it was fourth and one. I think a similar situation. It was fourth and one, fourth and a half yard, something like that, inside the five or inside the 10. So they didn't need to score. It wasn't fourth and goal, but that's when they threw to T. Higgins in the corner of the end zone. So it's almost, well, that, you know, that didn't work. So we're just going to go back to short yard situation. You run the ball. I would have loved for them to have boot Jake out to the right. Kind of similar to what happened on the touchdown. Give him an option to throw it, or give him an option to tuck it and run. If he gets stuffed, he gets stuffed. That means somebody made a play. As it was, Joe got stuffed for a three-yard loss because they had too many guys to block, and it wasn't one guy making a play. It was the entire front seven, the entire Chiefs defense that stopped them. So that was my problem.
It was just one of those scenarios when you're watching the game and they go for it. You're not yelling, don't kick it. You're not yelling any of that as a fan. But then you're looking and they run the play, and you have to have said to yourself after the play, that's what they had drawn up. Like, that's what they called, you know? And that's exactly what I said live. I'm like, that's what we called fourth and one. It's, you know, you're everything's on the line. You're laying it out there.
Yeah.
And this is your go-to. I mean, that's the best you got. It's hard for me to love that play call.
A lot of it is, I mean, it's, they don't trust the defense, and they also just didn't trust Jake Browning's decision-making, I think is what it came down to. Again, there was a lot of people that were just, they should have kicked it. You were up four, that puts you up seven. That gave momentum to them. Chiefs scored on 6 out of 7 possessions. That they were to keep them able to keep them to field goals instead of touchdowns is miraculous. But Bengals gave up 7 scoring drives. This game should have been 40 to 17. Like, this should have been an absolute ass kicking. Bengals defense gets zero credit for keeping them out of the end zone because they put them in that situation. They gave up chunk play after chunk play after chunk play. I mean, I'm looking at the Ravens. Rashee Rice, longest reception, 67 yards. Justin Watson, longest reception, 41 yards. Isaiah Pacheco, longest reception, 21 yards. Noah Gray, 16 yards. Pacheco had a 37-yard run. Just play after play after play. Defense keeps giving this up. The defense is just terrible, just giving up broken play after broken play. It three times in the entire game after the fumble, Chiefs had the ball 7 times, and 3 times they didn't score. It was the strip sack fumble, the punt to start the third quarter, and victory formation at the end of the game. You're not going to win a game. Like, you can kick that field goal. You can score that touchdown. It didn't matter because your defense wasn't going to stop them. So I'd completely go for 7 there all the time.
The only counter argument I would have to this, and I'm not saying it's a good one, but I do think there's some merit to it, is if you kick that field goal there, how does your defense start to feel about itself? Hey, we're up 7. And all of a sudden, if you get a stop, all of a sudden you're really in control of this game. I think when you have a young defense like that and you make the decision to go for it and it doesn't work, now not only did you not get it, but it's like double backfire because that young defense is like, here we go. I mean, we can't stop them. And now you're doing this, where if you kick the 3, you're like, okay, your thought process on defense is now, we just need 1 stop. We just need 1. And your whole mantra changes. So my only counter argument would be, what's the psyche of the defense if you do kick it? Does that affect the way they play? But I'm not saying it's a great argument, just playing devil's advocate.
Understood. And again, like, after that, 4 consecutive drives that led to field goals, 82 yards, 85 yards, 39 yards, and a 9-yard drive. It's the decision bot, you know, they've got the decision bot, tells you like what the winning percentage is, how much, you know, you gain by kicking. And the computer said, go for it. That's the odds, and it's only a couple of percent chance. I mean, that's the difference between a good call and a bad call. It's only a couple percentage points. It's not as if you're going 80% win chance to a 0% win chance if you know go for the first over kicking it. But this is just the season that the things didn't work out this year, and it's just frustrating. That's pretty much all the review we're going to do for this week, because it's just kind of a running theme of what happened for the year. We're going to go into more of what went wrong with the Bengals season. Obviously, Burrow's injuries played a huge part of it. The Bengals only had a healthy Joe Burrow for a quarter of the season, maybe? Yeah. I mean, he made 11 starts. 10 starts. 10 starts. And it was only the last handful of starts when he was fully healthy.
Yeah.
Incompetent run game. And again, I'm not putting this wholly on the running backs. There's so many things that work. It's the personnel with the ball, the personnel in front of them, and also the play call. I'm of the mind that I think I'm not against the offensive line. If they were to run it back, if they were to re-sign Jonah and run it back with this offensive line next year, I would be okay. I don't think that's going to happen, but I would be okay with that. I think they absolutely, and I'm never for advocating somebody to lose their gig, but if somebody's going to lose their gig, I think Frank Pollock's head has to be on the chopping block. What do you think?
I think it's fair. Yeah, I mean, I don't. It'd be hard to put up an argument against it, you know, if you were in the courtroom and I had to take the side of defending it, I wouldn't feel super, super stoked to be on that side.
A lot of the problem is the guys that they bring in, and there's a lot said, especially during draft season, and we're way ahead of ourselves talking about the draft. There's the relative athletic score, and we talked about it around draft season. It's a scale of 0 to 10 in term that takes into consideration their physical size. This is all relative to their position. Their physical size, their strength, their speed, basically all the stuff you do at the combine, the 40-yard dash, the shuttle drill, reps with, you know, vertical near the broad jump, all that crap. The Bengals have the least athletic offensive line. I don't know of anybody on their offensive line who actually tested in the top half, like a five or higher. I think Jonah might be up there, but he also has shorter arms and doesn't have the a lot of the measurables. Again, I just said a minute ago, I'd be cool with, you know, if they ran it back. I don't think that's going to happen. They need to bring guys in that are more athletic. It's one thing, like, we're not asking these guys to be sprint stars. Like, you're not trying to get them out, out in space, but you need them to be able to, especially tackles, both guys, they get absolutely smoked when you get someone who's hyper athletic like Miles Garrett. Orlando Brown's never going to be athletic. I mean, he's a monster of a man. I mean, Orlando Brown's 6'7", 6'8", 350 pounds. He's a good tackle, but he's always going to struggle with those athletic guys. And that's what you're going to get. He's in the wrong division, I think, for his abilities. But I mean, he's still better than what the Bengals have had for a while. The rest of the guys, and especially the interior, they played a lot better the second half of the season, especially the last four or five games, but they're just so limited. Their ceiling is limited. But then the question is, do we trust the Bengals to draft, develop, and bring guys in? Like, what do you do?
Well, here's the problem, and this is where the real problem lies. Okay, so you spend draft picks that never work out. Okay, so you're spending draft picks that never work out, but it's also not like the Bengals haven't spent money in free agency. I mean, they have spent countless dollars in free agent. Leo Collins, Orlando Brown. I mean, you have a bunch of money you're spending in free agency, plus you're spending draft capital, which the Bengals value at a rate that is almost unprecedented. You can't do both and be bad. If you're going to do both, that should be the strength of your team. I mean, look at, for example, the Bengals receiving corps. They don't spend money in free agency. They've drafted, they've used draft capital, but it's been successful. And they haven't spent money in free agency. I mean, you can't do both and still be bad. I mean, that is the ultimate coup de grace. Like, you're done. If you can't get one of them right, I can't. I'm literally giving you all the assets I have to use to go get guys to just be decent. We're not even asking for a phenomenal offensive line. We're asking for decency. And you use all the tools I have. I'm giving you every single tool, and you're failing. That's if I'm at my job and they give me all these assets and I do nothing with them, I don't know how long you're going to have that job. It just doesn't add up. I mean, the equation's pretty simple.
Yeah. I mean, where would you agree that the Bengals are the weakest, both sides of the ball?
Oh, 100%. Offensive
line. And where else? So where on defense would you say that they're the weakest?
I don't know. That's tough after this year, but go ahead.
I'd go with defensive line.
Yeah, I was leaning there, but it's tough.
Bengals have the fifth highest spending on offensive line in the entire NFL. Lions, Colts, Ravens, Falcons are ahead of them on the O line. They don't have good offensive lines. Then the Bengals, then the Steelers, Texans, Eagles, teams that are better than them. Defensive line. Bengals are number two in spending on their defensive line.
That's unbelievable.
Behind only the Chiefs because Chris Jones has such a huge hit.
Right.
And they're not getting... I can't remember who put this out. This might have been Joe Goodberry. It might have been Paul Daner. Bengals have been content to spend good money on average players.
Mm-hmm.
I like Sam Hubbard. He's a slightly better than average football player. He's not a good pass rusher. He's a good run stopper, but it's 2024. You need pass rushers from the edge position. And Sam Hubbard, his cap hit is almost $10 million. B.J. Hill. B.J. Hill is a solid player, especially in a rotation. He's having to play a ton of snaps because they don't have really anything next to him. He's making his cap hits almost $11 million. He's not that good of a play. Like, again, I don't want to say he's a bad player, but he's not. His contract underperforms his contract. We'll put it that way. And this isn't a knock on the players. I like both players, but when you have Joe Burrow's contract hitting in 2025, you can't spend all of this money on average players just to keep a decent player around. You have to churn. You need to be able to draft and develop. Bengals have been just terrible on both sides of the ball, drafting and developing. So they've had to rely on spending on the free agent market. Again, I mean, Orlando Brown's making $10 million this year. His contract is, I mean, I forget how much guaranteed he had him, the most guaranteed money of any offensive lineman. And he's an average offensive lineman. I'm fine with them paying a left tackle that money for an average player because you can't have a gaping hole there. They've had a gaping hole there.
And there's just not a ton of them available. You can't just go out and say, give me the best guy. So,
right.
Agreed, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, Jonah Williams is making, I mean, his cap hit is almost $13 million, and he's an average-ish right tackle. Alex Kappa's making pretty decent money for a guard, and he's an average-ish. It's so much of their money, it's good money, is paid, and it's I don't know if it's a matter of scouting. I don't know if it's a matter of poor development. Like, they're getting these guys and just not being able to coach them up. But something needs to change, and fast. I mean, the Bengals in 2024, their offense especially, is going to look a lot different than what it has the last 3 years. It's time to pay the piper. I mean, Jamar Chase is up for his extension. And again, his money isn't going to hit until 2026 or so. I mean, they're going to pick up the fifth year option for 2025. So, you know, that's all that money's taken care of, so it's going to be 26, 27 before that starts hitting. But this is when you need to draft well. And the Bengals, as much as we want to say that they're a good drafting team, they haven't been. Like, they've had a couple great drafts in the past 4 years. 2021 was decent, and last year, or this past year, looks to be really good outside of I really can't think of any whiff outside of, if your punter is your biggest whiff of the draft. And he's, you know, that's pretty good. I mean, yeah. From top to bottom, I mean, DJ Ivy was playing really well as a special teamer. He played well when he was put in limited action at quarterback. And he's your seventh round pick. Chase Brown or Curly Jones ran a punt back for you. Chase Brown ended up in your running back rotation. Yosevash was a key special teamer and made some clutch catches. Jordan Battle was an absolute revelation. Miles Murphy was probably. Relative to draft position, underperformed, but he performed exactly. I think the Bengals would be are completely satisfied, and he is right where they wanted him to be. People's complaints about Miles Murphy are that he wasn't an immediate day one starter, and there's an argument to be made that maybe the Bengals should have drafted a guy, but that's not what they drafted Miles Murphy to do. He was the guy who was going to be rotational guy, get more and more reps as the season went on, and he performed exactly what they wanted him to do.
The day one starter stuff to me is complete nonsense. I just think it's totally, it's nonsense. I mean, do you want Miles Murphy to be in there day one when it's going to hinder what he's going to be in year two, three, four, and five? Or would you rather he, you know, take his time and be good in year two, three, four, and five? So the day one starter stuff to me is nonsense. Now, if you're drafted in the top five, absolutely. You know, the guy's got to be a day one starter. But yeah. Drafting Miles Murphy at whatever he was, whatever. What was it, 27, 26?
It was late.
I can't remember the exact date, but, you know, neither here nor there. You draft at 29. If that guy's a day one starter, you hit an absolute home run.
Or your roster is that terrible that guy has to fill in.
Right. So I thought Miles Murphy was... I think he's been fine. The Bengals, to me, when you look at the way they've drafted, it's been a lot like Major League Baseball nowadays, where nobody cares about hitting singles. You know, the Bengals have a strikeout rate that is super high, super, super high. They'll strike out, they'll swing and miss, but they've hit a couple home runs. I mean, Burrow was a home run. Chase was a home run. T. Higgins was a home run. So they've hit some home runs. The problem is the strikeouts are coming back to bite you in the ass, and the problem is where the strikeouts occur. Our strikeouts occur on the offense and defensive line where, you know, it's kind of like, you know, batting with the bases loaded and two outs in the bottom of the ninth. The front is the bread and butter of the game. and we're striking out at in the wrong spots.
Yeah, and especially, and again, not counting the last few years, but the Bengals kind of, I don't want to say forte, but what the Bengals' strength in the early, in the 2010s, when they had that nice run, and when they had a better top-to-bottom roster, I think, than they had right now, because they had to overcome a, I don't want to say mediocre quarterback, but overcome a game manager, have to, you know, fill town around him quarterback, they hit in the middle and late rounds.
Yep.
Bengals have not done that at all. How many picks, I mean, just how many guys, you look at 2019, 2018, guys from day three, even guys from day two. I mean, Michael Jordan was, I think he was a day three pick. He's gone. Jack Carman is probably going to be out of the league. He was a second round pick. Khalid Kareem, Wyatt Hubert, like guys like that, these guys that are out of the league. Akeem Adeniji is no longer with the Bengals. And they're not all going to be hits from round 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Sure.
But you need to get contributors. You need to find a guy every couple of years that's going to be a starter. Cordell Volson was forced into starting, and that's what happens when you force a guy, for, you know, a mid-round pick as a starter. You get someone who is, just has such a low ceiling.
I think with 4 through 7, if you can average one starter a year, and that doesn't necessarily mean he's a starter the first year, but as it plays out, I think 4 through 7, if you can average one guy out of those four rounds that really becomes a key useful piece, not in because he has to, like Cordell Volson, not bashing Cordell Volson. I thought he played better at the end, but you need one from 4 through 7 every year. I think if you can just kind of average that out, and then 1 through 3, you really should hit majority of them. I know you're going to miss on some third round picks. That's going to happen. But 1 and 2, I mean, those should pretty much be as good as gold. Outside of this year, 4 through 7, I would love to look back at those averages, because I don't think it would be promising.
No, I can't think of one guy on the roster, on the active roster, that came from a late round pick that that provides much much value at all. I mean, I'm looking up and down the roster. Logan Wilson was a third rounder. That's like the latest pick. Jack Garner, like.
Yeah.
Tupou, I think, was an undrafted free agent, but he's just a rotational guy that, you know, that really doesn't give you much. Akeem Davis-Gaither has been nothing more than a special teamer and an injury fill-in. Zach Carter has been just god-awful, and maybe this year he puts more weight on. He puts actually fills out in the lower end so he can kind of have a little bit of an anchor and not get pushed aside so much. But, you know, I mean, Chris Evans, I mean, all these guys with late-round picks that are just whiffs. You need to get... You need to get some sort of value out of that, or just trade the damn pick.
Yep, that's
so.
I mean, that's kind of if I could, you know, get in the Bengals' office, I would just why can we never trade picks? Why can't we ever trade picks to move up when none of this stuff works? Clearly, 4 through 7 is not our, you know, not our best area. Why can we never trade up? And trade a couple fourths and a fifth and get into the, you know, middle third. And I just it doesn't make sense to me, because you have such a high success rate right here, and then you move one round later and the rates drop tremendously, not just league wide, but for you specifically.
Yeah.
You would think.
But. They'll trade picks to move up and around, but they won't trade picks to add another pick in a round. Yeah. Trade your fourth through, you know, trade your 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th to add another third round pick. Don't trade picks to move up in that round. Add another pick, because you're getting value out of that pick. You get another swing at it, as opposed to guys where you're literally just throwing darts at it, you know, like blindly throwing darts and picking a name. Brad Robbins. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Grade the Bengals running back room. We'll kind of go just position group by position group. I'm not going to ask the quarterback, because that's, I don't. You can't. You can't give that. That's an I.
Is this so. Is this compared to what we thought it would be this year, or are we talking about across the entire NFL?
We'll grade as to what we thought we had.
This year for the Bengals running back room, I would give it a C+, maybe C+. Yeah, somewhere in that area.
You're a bit more kinder of a grader than I am. I would go C-, D+.
You don't know how good I thought they were going to be.
I wasn't over. And that's part of it. I wasn't that confident going into the year either, but I thought that they would use some of the depth, and they just didn't. I get slow playing Chase Brown into the, you know, he's a rookie. He, you know, he had ball, he had issues fumbling the ball. So you're not going to throw him in there. You don't want him to cost the game just, you know, fumbling in a crucial moment. But Trevion Williams barely got any carries. Not that he would have done much anyway. Again, Chris Evans did nothing, hasn't done anything since he was drafted. Joe Mixon was, I guess Mixon was probably about what you would expect. I mean, his was probably a C. I mean, he still catches the ball, but has caught the ball better the last 2 years, and I think we thought that he could because he just wasn't asked to catch it much. But his inability to pick up that short yardage is for someone who's a power back. It's just incredibly frustrating. So yeah, I would go
the perfect sports term for Mixon this year would be par. I mean, it was just you can't really describe it any other way.
Yeah, I'll say it. So I would give Mixon a C+, but the rest of the room in more of usage than anything else gets almost an F.
Yeah.
But I'll average it down to a C- or so. Wide receiver room. I mean, this was the best wide receiver room in football coming in. They brought in two rookies. What do you think of them going in the year? They're coming out of the year.
I would literally give an incomplete grade. It's hard to give a grade, not just because of the Chase and the Higgins injuries and all of that, but then you add in the quarterback injuries for Burrow early, which I thought, you know, derailed the receivers, but can we really judge the receivers on the first two games? I don't know that they could have. You could have had Superman or the Flash out there, and I don't know that they would have done any better. And then when you go to Jake Browning, and now you're talking about a different offense and a different, I feel like for the wide receivers, it was incomplete. I mean, it's kind of, wide receivers are kind of like, they're kind of like the vice president. If the president doesn't do me good, then it's going to be really hard for me to be successful. Nobody's going to say, man, what a great vice president, when, you know what I mean? So you rely on that quarterback room just as much as anything. So I would give the wide receivers an incomplete just because I thought they were dealt a bad hand the whole year. If I did have to give a grade, I would probably go C- because the pop that you thought you were going to get really wasn't there. I mean, there were flashes of it, but not what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I'm going to be, again, we went into the season thinking that this team was absolutely stacked the wide receiver position. And it didn't turn out that way. There were so many crucial drops by Higgins. Yeah. Mixon had some bad drops, and I guess that's more running back room. But Chase only had a few drops, but crushing drop by Tyler Boyd. Boyd and Higgins just couldn't get open. They couldn't separate.
Yeah.
I saw way too much, way too much Trenton Irwin. Trenton Irwin, sure-handed. He had zero drops on the season, but he can't get himself open against you or me in man-to-man coverage. So the last handful of games when Bengals are playing shorthanded, Chase is injured or T went out with his hamstring injury, they're still running him out there instead of, say what you want about Charlie Jones. Charlie Jones has that short area quickness to where he can lose a defender. Yoselach has the physical ability to go, you know, just straight line run past the defense or go up and over because he's got the physical attributes similar to T Higgins. I would go, yeah, more towards a D. I don't know what was going on with T. Higgins all year long. Yeah, you grade on a curve because of the offense. You're switching. I mean, you had to limit the offense so much in the first quarter of the season with Burrow, and in the last almost half with Burrow being out, you've got a different quarterback. Yeah, they're still running the same routes, but ball's coming out a lot. Well, we'll be blunt, a lot slower. I mean, Burrow has never been known as someone who throws, you know, he's got a fastball. Jake Browning's throwing knuckleballs up there. He's got great anticipation. He's got really good accuracy, but he there's not much on his passes. So there's something to be said with just, you know, maybe dropping one here or there because you're just the timing is different with the pass. But it's just, I'm looking forward to next year being different. And the talent, the top end talent's not going to be there next year. So, I mean, I think we're pretty safe assuming that we don't think T. Higgins is going to be back next year in a Bengals uniform. That Tyler Boyd's gone. He's a free agent. I don't see any chance of them bringing Tyler Boyd back. I just think something fresh. The Bengals offense has gotten stale. I would love for Brian Callahan to get hired this year and for that entire offensive coaching staff to get changed up. Never mind Frank Pollock losing his job, but if Callahan gets hired as a head coach somewhere, does Pitcher move up? Does he take Pitcher with him to be his offensive coordinator? Like, just some changing. Like, it's gotten stale. I think they need different voices in there. I mean, they're still pretty much going to run 85% of what Burrow wants to run, but it's become really predictable with the guys they have. So, especially again, leaning towards the, or speaking specifically about the wide receiver room, it's going to be interesting because it's going to be a lot different moving forward.
Yeah, I just think the Bengals offensively need somebody that's going to come in and not necessarily tell Burrow, listen, this is what we're going to do, but you need somebody that's going to come in and tell Burrow, hey, this is some of what we're going to do. It's not going to be everything you love. And I love Burrow, and I think he's the best, and I don't think he's doing anything to try to hurt the team. But when we run Burrow's offense, it is, you know, kind of predictable. I think they need somebody that's going to add in that 10 to 15%, because I think that's the difference, is the 10 to 15% where you say, here's some plays we're going to run that these are actually going to work. And Burrow, there's no chance of you getting hit. It's an easy first down play. You need an offensive coordinator that's going to come in and kind of put his fist down and say, hey, you might be Joe Burrow, but I'm the offensive coordinator, you know, and I think need to kind of pull the reins back on Burrow being the offensive coordinator a little bit.
Yeah. And again, I mean, it's Bengals have been incredibly lucky to have the continuity with all their coaches since they, since Zach Taylor was hired. But at some point that stops being a benefit. Yeah. And you need to freshen stuff up. I think the Bengals defense has played Lou out of a head coaching gig next year. Who knows? I mean, he's still really well regarded. I'd be surprised if he didn't get any interviews, but
I can't imagine with where the NFL's going now, everybody wants to hire offensive guys. I think it's going to be hard for Lou to get a job now, especially when, you know, he didn't get the ones in previous years. So I agree. I think it'll be tough.
Yeah. And he's also, not that it matters for his ability, but he's 60 years old. They're going, you know, I mean, they hire young offensive guys, not old defensive guys. So, we'll see how that plays out. Tight end room. I don't think there's any way to put that outside of an, I don't know. I say a D+ only because Tanner Hudson was one of the five best tight ends in the NFL when he was active.
I was going to say D-, and the only positive is that, that Tanner Hudson looked, you know, promising. But outside of Tanner Hudson, it was, if there was such thing as an F-, then that's what it would be. I mean, it was terrible.
Yeah, I mean,
I had high hopes for Irv Smith coming in. So, I mean, it's not like I'm bashing what the Bengals did. I thought Irv Smith was going to be a very useful piece. I really did. I thought the only thing I cared about with Irv Smith was, is he going to be healthy?
Yeah.
And he was healthy, and it did not matter.
I mean, he wasn't able to get open. He wasn't able to catch, you know, hang on to the ball. I will give him credit that when they finally did activate Tanner Hudson, he became the primary pass-catching tight end until kind of at the end when last couple of games with Jake Bryan, and then he was just throwing four or five passes to everybody every game. I mean, Drew Sample got more passes than I think he'd ever expect. Mitch Wilcox was getting passes. Irv Smith wasn't getting any because he was inactive for a couple games. But I do want to give a shout-out to Drew Sample because, I mean, he was, for the role that they put him in, I think he played great. I think he played fantastic.
I agree.
He is, I mean, the fullback is having a mini comeback. People are saying the Bengals should get a full-time fullback. No, I think that's a terrible idea. They have Drew Sample. I mean, he's their H-back. I mean, that's what his position is there for. He's the fullback. He's the pass or the third down blocking back in when they don't need that extra receiver like that. You know, they don't need the agile receiver. He stays in there, and he's a fantastic, amazing pass blocker for his for being a tight end and not a lineman.
he's a perfect backup tight end to me. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know that you can draw it up any better. We talk about the Bengals bringing in the extra offensive lineman. I don't know why they ever do it. Just leave Sample in, and now you have that double threat. Not that he's a massive threat catching the ball, but he can catch the football, and we've seen him do things.
Yeah.
And I really think from when he caught the, whatever it was, 28-yard touchdown in Cincinnati on that little delay route, kind of the late release.
The Buffalo?
Yeah, was that Buffalo?
Yeah.
That from that point on, I thought he became a very reliable pass catcher, where in the past, sometimes you threw him the ball and he looked out of sorts. I mean, just looked like he was really struggling with the ability to run his route and try to catch the ball. Where after that point, I really thought he became very solid when you threw him the ball. I think he makes a perfect backup tight end. I hope the Bengals bring him back. And I would have no problem with the Bengals going into next season with Tanner Hudson and Drew Sample.
They need to augment, though. They need someone young, and they need somebody athletic. Hudson's fairly athletic, but again, this is a guy who's going to be 30 years old. This is not a guy that you're going to build long-term with him as your tight end. But he's proved that he can be a good kind of placeholder. You draft somebody, and again,
the problem is you just passed up on one of the most historical tight end drafts of all time.
Generational.
Absolutely. And you just decided not only not to get one of the top ones, you decided not to get any of them. I mean, look at Green Bay. They got Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft. They got two good tight ends out of this whole deal. So I think the Bengals missed the boat not drafting a tight end last year somewhere. You know, Tucker Kraft went in the fifth or sixth round out of South Dakota State. That kid can play. So I think the Bengals really missed the boat not getting a young guy last year. But, you know, that's water under the bridge, I guess.
And this isn't even hindsight. I mean, we were talking about it during the actual draft. Like, what are they? Like, how are they missing out? Again, I didn't want them to get we were talking about Michael Mayer being the number first pick, or Kincaid. I don't think anybody thought Sam Laporta was going to be the first tight end drafted. He's lived up to it, but the hit rate on tight ends in the first round, Bengals have drafted two tight ends in the first round relatively recently with Gresham and Eifert, and for different reasons, clearly neither one of them can say was a hit.
But also those guys were starters for years, and they were at times very useful. I mean, agreed, you can say they were misses, but you gave yourself the ability, you know, if everything would have worked out, that it was those were, I think those both had a chance to be really good picks. Eifert, obviously, because of injuries, Gresham, some other things, but you can't look at a draft with 20 draft eligible tight ends that are high level guys and not take one of them. That's going to hurt the Bengals. I don't know how you recover, because there's not going to be another draft like that. You're going to have to use high capital to get these guys. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. And I didn't mean to say that Eifert or Gresham were busts or anything like that.
Right.
I think the value, it's a matter of value. You look at the best tight ends in the league, and they tend to, and I think it's more fluke than anything else, because if they were going to be this high, or if they were going to be this good, they would have been drafted higher. But George Kittle and Travis Kelce, I think they're both fifth rounders, weren't they? And it's trended to be guys that were more middle of the draft guys. Again, there were so many guys that went in. I mean, I'm looking at right here, and there were five guys that were drafted in the fifth round. Bengals added an extra pick so they could draft a punter who, oh, by the way, was fucking terrible.
Yeah, he was subpar.
I mean, I'm not blaming them for picking a punter, you know, or for the punter that they picked because he sucked, because, I mean, he severely underperformed his ability, but it was just so weird. We knew they needed a tight end. They didn't have, like, they had one kind of starting level tight end who had a huge injury history, but also was an undersized tight end and they came away with nobody. It was just so weird.
Yeah. Speaking about punter, I'm making my bold prediction for the offseason, and I'm making it now. The Bengals are going to bring in the punt god.
I was just going to mention that. Are they becoming, he was, Again, he had some awful, awful allegations, and the Bills drafted him. He was exonerated. He was exonerated. So, and obviously, I'm sure any team that has any interest in drafting him or in signing him, they're going to do due diligence, make sure that, you know, this wasn't, you know, this isn't a matter of a guy just with a crappy character that was, you know, he was exonerated, but he's still an asshole or anything. Sure. That's, so, you know, they're going to do due diligence, but the guy has a leg. Bengals need a game-changing punter. They haven't had a legit game-changing punter since
Lee Johnson.
Maybe Lee. I mean, Lee Johnson was a good punter for a long time, and
he had some years where he was a top three punter. I mean,
okay,
a couple.
I just remember that the Bengals would bring him in for long field goals because Jim Breach was deadly automatic 40 yards in, but anything 45 and longer, he didn't have the leg, so they'd bring Lee Johnson in for the longer field goals.
Maybe I met him and Doug Pelfrey one night at an Outback as a kid, and they were both the nicest people ever and signed autographs for me, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. So maybe I elevate Lee Johnson a little bit. I don't know.
He was a very outspoken, very intellectual guy. I know he was he always had stock tips for the Bengals beat writers. So I'm sure he's done very well for himself, because, you know, especially in the 80s and 90s, punters, I mean, they still made better living than I'd ever make, but weren't making fair money. But I'm sure he did well in the stock market and has invested his money wisely. So I'm sure wherever he is, he's got to be close to 60, if not older. I'm sure he's doing well for himself. Also, Doug Pelfrey, proud University of Kentucky alum, right?
That's correct. Scott High School, right over here in Northern Kentucky.
That's right. He was. He was local. I knew he was UK, and I wasn't sure if he was actual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scott High School, whose football program is a little down right now, but yeah, he was a Northern Kentucky guy.
I don't think you feel too sad about Scott High School being down. I mean, you've got they're no Lloyd juggernauts.
I'm okay with it.
Quickly, offensive line. What do you grade the offensive line?
This is I would give the offensive line again. I think maybe just a flat C. I don't know that I want to give it a C plus or a C minus, but maybe just a flat C. I think Jonah Williams played well at right tackle, well enough. But again, there was times when the offensive line got cooked a little bit. But there was also times where they did some really good things. So I would give it a C. I think, you know, with the Bengals passing game, this offensive line should really be a lot better than it is, because there are a lot of quick throws. I would give it a C. I wasn't overly impressed.
I think it's fair. It's performance, I would say C minus, D plus, but what's the best ability?
Availability.
They have made and will make all 17 starts, all five of them. So that's, yeah, I think that's the most important thing. And yeah, I think the Bengals offensive line depth is decent, but they really didn't have to use them outside of a couple plays here or there. I mean, Orlando Brown Jr. went out for the end of a game with a hamstring injury. I can't remember. Kappa went out because he got poked in the eye, which is amazing how you get your eye poked out, but you don't draw a flag for hands to the face.
Did I see this right? Did Lael Collins sign with Dallas, or was he just there on a visit?
I'm looking at it right now. Lael Collins agrees to contract ahead of the 2024 playoffs.
Okay, yeah, that's. I thought I had read something, and I wasn't sure.
Yeah, but it was. I knew he was down. I knew he had had was down there and had a meeting with them, and probably took a physical and everything.
Yeah,
he had left without one, so maybe he was wandering around malls in Dallas. That was the craziest nonsense when Lyle Collins meeting with the Bengals. He left without a meeting, and then everyone's like, "Oh my god, I saw him at Kenwood Town Center." And
yeah,
I'm like, "Okay." And then they announced, like, "Yeah, they did sign him." So probably just wandering around the various malls of the Metroplex until they ended up putting pen to paper.
So I get my money.
Right. Okay. Defensive line.
Gosh, outside of try. I mean, this is a tough one. I guess a D plus maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I give Trey Hendrickson, you know, a great grade, but if you really separate the outlier, then I, you know, that grade becomes an F in my mind. So I'll give it a D plus, I guess.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there too. Hendrickson was fantastic. Reader had a good year too. I don't really have I've got no issues with him. Yeah. He's getting older, so snap count's going to go down, and obviously he tore his quad muscle.
Yeah.
Comments from Lou Anarumo this week make it sound like he wants him back. What are you going to get from a 30 year old? Let's see. Yeah, he'll be 30 years old in July. 30 year old coming off his second surgery for a torn muscle, season ending injury for a quad, this different quad. I don't know. I would love for them to bring him back and for the locker room presence, even as a reduced thing, but they cannot rely on him to be the starting nose tackle.
Yeah, I mean, I want my hot ex-girlfriend back from when I was 22, but she's lived life. She's not the same anymore. You know, I mean, things change. I don't know. I mean, if you get him back at the right price, but you still don't know what you're going to get. I mean, I feel terrible for Reader. I love the guy. I think he's phenomenal. But that's the wrong side of what the Bengals usually like to be on, which is low risk, high reward.
Yeah.
That seems like a high risk, low reward kind of deal. I don't know how it works out for you.
Yeah. And the only reason that I think he has a chance to come back is there's nobody behind him. Josh Tupou isn't good enough. Jay Tufele isn't good enough. I don't know who else is an actual nose tackle in that room.
But to me, that kind of brings me to the point of, if you're going to spend money on DJ Reader, why not spend $2 or $3 million extra dollars and bring in a guy that you at least know what you're going to get. And I feel horrible for Reader. I love the guy. I think he deserves to get paid. I doubt he will because of this injury. And I hate that for him. And I hate that I'm sitting here saying, pay somebody else $3 million extra, because at least you know what you're going to get. Cause he's earned every dollar that he signed for. Unfortunately, this injury just comes at a completely inopportune time.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the free agents for the defensive tackle. They don't separate them into nose tackle, three technique, anything like that. But pretty much all the guys that are, at least that are coming into the or coming out of the season as high paid, they're all around the same age too. I mean, Chris Jones is 29 and a half, same age as DJ Reader. Grover Stewart, 30.2 years. Fletcher Cox, 33 years. Sheldon Rankins, 29. Austin Johnson, 29. Daquan Jones, 32. I mean, these are all older guys. So do you want, if they want to bring in somebody who's got ability, they're going to have to drop some more coin. And that's, again, that's more money into a defensive line that's already really highly invested in with minimal.
Isn't Sheldon Rankins a Louisville guy?
I think he is drafted. Yeah, he was Louisville first round, 12th overall, 2016.
So maybe
keep him away? Is that what you're saying?
No. Listen, as a UK guy, I don't hate on Louisville unless we're playing them, I'm okay. I root for Louisville every other time. I actually have more hatred for UC. I don't know. I think it's because my buddies like UC. I just have to hate them. But maybe that's an option there. I think that one, I can see a fit with Rankins.
See, my brother and his daughter are like the lone UC fans living in Louisville right now. Everyone else has either UK or U of L flags. He lives next door to the associate athletic director for University of Louisville. So, he's by himself flying the Seapaw. but his daughters, he's got two daughters, and the one that cares about sports, he brought her up right for UC, not UK or U of L. So,
that poor girl. I mean, jeez, UC.
Hey, now. They're not going to go 3. They'll be better than 3-9 next year, I hope. You think so? I think so.
Well, they did lose to Miami, Ohio this year, I guess. So maybe they'll get that win next year, hopefully.
They played Towson.
Yeah, Towson.
I don't know. I just signed my. I just got my renewal notice for my season tickets.
Well, I mean,
in email.
I can tell you right now, as long as Scott Satterfield's the head coach at UC, UC will not be successful. That guy is not a Power 5 coach. I've never been so happy when UC hired somebody, because normally when UC hires a guy, I'm like, damn, man, they got another good one, Like Luke Fickell, I was like, this is going to be a dynamite hire. This is absolutely going to work. He can build a little mini Ohio State down here in Cincinnati. when they hired Scott Satterfield from Louisville, I laughed. I was like, this is a joke.
Louisville fans were happy as hell about it.
They were going to fire his ass. I mean, they didn't want him. And even more telling than that is you look at what Brohm's done once he's got to Louisville with the same players. It's not like he had some monster recruit. He had the same players.
I mean,
don't like Satterfield.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're not a Bearcat podcast, but he had 2/3 of his roster turned over. They'll be better next year. He's not going to lead them to, you know, multiple 10 win seasons. They're not going to challenge for the Big 12 title while he's there. But I think last year was the bottoming out, and as awful as they played Oklahoma tight. Like they were
still in games.
Yeah. I mean, they could have, should have beat Baylor. They could have, should have beat, directional Florida. I mean, they got their other games. They got absolutely just,
And the good news for them is the Big 12 is trending downwards as far as, you know, Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a beefed up Conference USA almost. I mean, there's still a lot of talent in the Big 12, but
it's going to be entertaining as hell because there isn't any, but there also isn't any, terrible team. I mean,
yeah, there's Kansas no bum either. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Kansas traditionally was the bum, but they've been really good the last couple of years. Like, they're a really talented team. I saw them playing, like, their quarterback and good. Like they were good. I mean, UC, who 2 years ago was in the College Football Playoff, was the worst team. I mean, yeah. Houston wasn't very good either, but I mean, Houston's in Texas. They've got, you know, they've got a pretty good chance to, you know, to get recruit their way back to respectability. So, yeah. Way off track here. Linebackers, the linebackers, an F, absolute F, because
I agree.
They had the talent, they got their extensions, and they just didn't play well enough. They've struggled in coverage, they struggled in tackling. Just disappointing season. And again, I put that, a lot of it just kind of, especially in coverage, the issue was dealing with new safeties and just when to drop coverage and when to pick, you know, stuff like that, but hard F. Defensive back room, where's that?
I think I would give that a C+, maybe, just because I'm looking towards the future. And I do think we talked about this, young guys.
Yeah.
You're going to struggle. The more young guys you play, you're going to struggle. And I think you saw that all year, that they were able to make plays, but not consistently. You know, so that's why we continued to give up drives, because on defense, you have to put together 3 stops in a row. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. And I do think the defensive line or the defensive backs will get there. So I give it a C+, pointing towards an A, because I think the A is coming. You know, the darkest of the night is just before the dawn. So, and I think in the defensive back room, you're in the darkest part of the night right now.
Yeah, the talent is definitely there. There's a lot of talk that maybe Dax Hill might be best suited as a slot, less of a safety and more of a slot corner, which I'd be okay with. I mean, he's got the physical ability to run with the smaller guys. Plus, he's got the size to match up against tight ends. So, Mike Hilton has one more year, and Mike Hilton's getting long in the tooth. And Hilton had kind of an up and down year. I mean, he's still able to. I mean, you're not going to see anybody come off the edge on run blitzes and pass rushes like he does with such ferocity. But his time is short. He's got one more year on his contract, and you can guarantee Bengals aren't going to keep him around because he's going to be over 30.
Well, and I think I was talking to a Michigan buddy of mine, a big, big Michigan fan, and he
congrats
said
to them this weekend.
Yeah, this should be a fun final. But talking to the Michigan guy, and he's like, man, you know what? You said Dax Hill was good. I thought he was going to struggle in the back end. This is what my buddy was saying to me. He goes, I thought he would struggle playing that center field or, you know, that deep role, because he never played it at Michigan. So I think if you really look at Dax Hill for what he did for the Bengals when he really in college did not have reps doing that, I thought he looked pretty good. But I think we all kind of thought he lined up in the slot corner kind of mold regardless. I don't know if this was out of necessity. Obviously it kind of was, but I think Dax Hill has ability to be all over the place. And I think he can be, with Mike Hilton having 1 year left, I think you can kind of start rolling Dax Hill down into that nickel, and Dax Hill can learn a little bit from Mike Hilton, because if there's one thing you can say about Mike Hilton, he plays the position in such a way.
Smart.
Yeah, that is literally the intangibles. You can just see them. So I think if I was the Bengals, I'd be trying to get Dax Hill with Mike Hilton as much as possible. I'd be sending them on a 7-day cruise together. I'd be making sure they eat lunch together. I'd be making everything. I would tell Dax Hill, I want you to, whatever Mike Hilton thinks, I want you to think it before he thinks it. I want you to tell me what he's about to think. And that would be my goal for the Bengals, because obviously Mike Hilton's gone after next year. But he's been everything and more that the Bengals could have asked for when they signed that contract. And the Bengals would love to see Dax Hill take 75% of Mike Hilton's game and put it into his own.
Yeah, and it also helps that how huge of a hit they had with Jordan Battle. He was, of all rookie defenders, he's the highest graded in run defense per PFF. Yeah. These are linebackers, defensive linemen, everybody. He was one of the best safeties in the entire NFL. I mean, he was, I think, 13th out of 97 for his grade from PFF. As a rookie, as a, you know, as a late day two pick, he was, I questioned the pick because they brought in Nick Scott to be a starter. And like, do they need someone drafted this high, but if someone that they liked a lot higher that fell into their lap? And you see it. Yeah, he's not the most physically intimidating. Like, he doesn't run the 4.3, 4.2 that pretty much everyone else in the backfield runs. He's just so smart. He's in the right position. He makes plays. He doesn't miss tackles. He's going to be, I mean, he kind of reminds me, it's Sean Williams when he first came around. Like, just the guy that, he's not spectacular. He's not Jesse Bates out there playing center field and all these pass breakups and everything, but he's the ball doesn't get thrown his way because he's in this perfect spot for his coverage. So
I just thought Jordan Battle was such an amazing pick, because anytime I can get a three-time captain for Nick Saban.
Right, for Nick Saban of all people.
In a late round situation, if Nick Saban Nick Saban doesn't give you captain because you're the best player.
Yeah.
You don't get captain because Nick Saban.
Or just for tenure.
Right. And to be a three-time captain, I mean, that means you're a captain when you're 19. You're a captain when you're 19 years old of 22 and 23 and 24 year olds. I mean, that's impressive, especially at a program like Alabama. So anytime I can get a guy from Alabama that's a three-time captain in a later round, I think you just take your shot. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But clearly it has, and I think the Bengals, you know, are going to reap the rewards of that one for a little while.
Yeah. Special teams, I think it's probably a C. I mean, McPherson hit every kick under 50 yards, which is what you want. I mean, and he was – fine on 50 plus. Like, I don't really have any complaints. Robbins was flaming hot ass. I think he's better than that, but I also don't think he's going to be kicking for the 2024 Bengals, so I don't care. Cal Adamidas had zero unplayable snaps, so C works for me. Quickly here, Bengals, want to check this. They were 6-point favorites hosting Cleveland at 1 p.m. They're battling to finish above 500 on Sunday. Browns are going to be resting a lot of their key players. How much do you really care about this game? I don't want to say, like, I want the Bengals to finish above 500. It's a nice feather in the cap, but if they don't, and when we went up before we went came on the air, Bengals could possibly end up with almost the top 10 pick if they lose, and depending on, because there's a lot of games between a lot of teams that are, there's a ton of teams going to end up between 7 and 9 wins. If the teams with 7 wins win and the Bengals lose, then everybody's got 8 wins, and Bengals aren't going to win a ton of tiebreakers because the teams that they did beat were the better. Like, I don't.
The playoff. Yeah, the playoff, you know. The playoff teams.
So they could end up with a pretty good draft pick if they lose. Again, I don't want them to lose, but I really don't care what's going to happen. Yeah. It'd be nice to beat Cleveland because they can't really talk anything because they're both playing backup quarterbacks. So it's not as if they beat their backups with Joe Burrow or anything like that. But I really don't care. No, nobody important get hurt. Chase, if you have any goals to reach or anything, get a couple catches and then sit down and let Yosavash. I don't think T's going to play. He hasn't practiced yet this week.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine. If you're T, there's just no way you're playing. I wouldn't.
The only reason I could see him like wanting to go out there is finishing the season healthy to put on tape if you hit the free agent market. He's missed so much time. He really has. Like, he's missed... Like, he's been at 70, maybe less than three quarters of games over 4 years that he's been out there, and that again, we said it earlier, best available or the best ability availability. So
yeah, he's missed a ton of time, and the Bears will give him $100 million as soon as he hits free agency. I mean, you know they will. I mean, somebody's going to give that guy the bag. I just don't think this one game's really that important for him. I know he's missed time, but somebody's going to give him the money.
If they want to give him their second round pick for T. Higgins, I'm cool with that, because they're, you know, no, it'll be a mid second round pick, not too far from where the Bengals would be picking, because they're another one of the 7-9 teams right now.
Yeah.
So I'm cool with that. Going forward, next week is going to be our last episode before the Super Bowl. We're going to take a little time off. We're going to recap the season finale, and we're going to set the roster situation with the Bengals going into the offseason. So you guys have any questions or anything like that, email it to us, team@riverfrontcincy.com. Throw them over to our Twitter at the Bengals Show. Always happy to answer questions. And again, going into the season, be a good time to take any questions. Greg, final thoughts before we get out of here for the night?
I think if you look at this Bengals season as a whole, Burrow injuries, Chase injuries, Higgins injuries, Reader, Cam Taylor, Britt, I mean, you factor all that in. If I would have told you that before the season, saying going into week 17, you got a chance at 9-8, I think most people would be surprised. So as much as this Bengals season was disappointing, it is kind of promising in a sense that all these things went wrong and you still went 9-8. And if Tyler Boyd catches a ball against Houston, you're 10-7. And that's with all this stuff going wrong. So, it was disappointing. But I do think there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I think the window for the Bengals is as open as it's ever been.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, set up for this team's going to look a lot different going forward in 2024. I think this is a credit to the team that Zac Taylor has. Again, we can quibble over play calls.
Yeah,
I would like him to give a play calling. I don't think he ever will, as long as he's the head coach. That this team, with missing their quarterback, with having a bruised and battered, limited Burrow for the first quarter plus of the season, and then playing with a backup for most of the second half of the season, that they even have a chance to finish above 500. It's a testament to the staff, him, the guys that he has around him. And I still get text messages every week. Love my father-in-law. Great guy. Busted, the nicest, kindest guy I've ever come across. I constantly get text messages. Oh, Taylor's such a terrible coach. And I'm like, what? They have Jake Browning throwing to Trenton Irwin.
Yeah.
Like, what do we want him to do? What magic play call outside of the weird trick plays, which I love. Give me a trick play. I don't care if it's fourth and inches with a Super Bowl on the line. Run a Philly special. Run a crazy trick play. I will always stand up and defend because it's fun. What do you want him to do?
Well, I mean, I'm the opposite. I just remember Dick LeBeau and Marv and all the things that we've been through with coaches.
Bruce Coslett.
Yeah. Zac Taylor's created a locker room. It's real. It matters. And these guys believe in him, and they go out and give everything that they have. And I think this year was the biggest definer of that. All of these things wrong, and you have a chance to go 9-8. I mean, that's impressive. That really is impressive. So I like Zac Taylor. I do agree. Give up some play calling duties or, you know, however you want to describe it, but something's got to change there a little bit. But I like Zac Taylor. I like what he's done in Cincinnati, and I like where they're headed. So I ride with Zac Taylor. I'm good.
Absolutely. I hope everyone had a good new year. Everyone be safe. We will catch up with you again next week. Until then, peace out.